Thank you for listening to this message from the pulpit of Coon Rapids Baptist Church in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Job chapter 13 in the Bible, in your Bible tonight. The title of our message tonight is this, Guilty, Guilty, Guilty. With a friend like Zophar, who needs an enemy, right? Zophar is a real friend of Job. He is a believer. In many senses, we could say he's a godly man. He certainly knows God. He knows God and knows much about God and the spiritual life. Zophar made a long journey. He sat with Job for a week without saying anything. He listened to two other friends talk to Job, and then Job responded to those two other friends before Zophar finally got a chance to talk. But when Zophar opens his mouth in chapter number 11, Zophar's speech is very hot. He's got a bad attitude. He's caustic. He's sarcastic. And we considered a little bit of that last time we looked at this. We noticed that Zophar opened up his speech by saying, Job is guilty. God didn't even give you all that you deserve. Boy, that was ruthless. And then he moved on and he said, Job, you're stupid. You'll be smart when a donkey gives birth to a human being. He was being sarcastic and he was insulting Job as well. Job, you're stupid. And then the third thing that Zophar basically said is, Job, you can have hope if you'll simply repent, follow my simple two steps, repent, turn to God, and everything will be okay. The only problem was, is Job had already followed those steps and everything wasn't okay. And so Zophar speaks, he's got this short little speech of 20 verses, and Job is going to respond. Zophar makes these three basic points. Job is going to respond to those three points with three chapters. One chapter for each one of these points. And we noted last time that the idea that Job, you're stupid, was probably the first thing that Job wanted to deal with, and so he did deal with that in chapter 12. Now he's going to move in chapter 13 to deal with the subject of Job, you're guilty. And so we saw in chapter number 12, my life is in the Lord's hands. It's universal knowledge and there's universal proof of that. Great truth for us to consider. But now Job is going to look at this subject of guilty, guilty, guilty. It's really an interesting thing when you consider this matter of guilt, because in the first half of the chapter, Job deals with friends who treat him as if he's guilty, right? The friends are, that's how they're doing it. They're treating him as if he's guilty. In the second half of the chapter, Job says, I feel like God is treating me like I'm guilty. Both of those aspects are brought out here. The friends are acting like I'm guilty, and according to how Job feels, it's like God is treating me like I'm guilty. And Job's going to deal with that. The emphasis of the message is going to fall really on the first half of that, the first point, and we're going to spend most of our time applying the first half of this chapter to our lives. If we're going to talk about this matter of guilt, we've got to see if Job really is guilty here. We've got to talk a little bit about that. But these friends are very intriguing, and I want you to see a little bit of this brought out here. What gets our attention in this chapter, if Job is going to be talking about guilt here, what gets our attention? Because if these friends are godly, they know God, they really do care about Job, they know a lot about their spiritual things here, they know a lot about that, but they get something horribly wrong. Could it happen that you and I could make that same mistake? I know God. I know a lot about God. I'm interested in defending God. Could I make the same mistake that Job's friends made? Could it be that there is going to be times in which I would call somebody else guilty who really isn't guilty? And so as we look at this, I think you'll find a way in which it applies to our lives. Do you like it when somebody wrongfully thinks that you're guilty? Kids in the room here. Do you like it when your mom thinks you were the one who did what was wrong when really it was your sibling? We don't really like that, do we? adults, we don't really like it when the boss thinks we did what was wrong, when really it was somebody else. We don't like it when the policemen think it was us that was speeding, when really it was the other car, or whatever the case, all right? We don't like it when we are considered to be guilty, when truly we're innocent. And we struggle with that. It's a hard thing. Our family went out to Salt Lake City this summer, and in part of our trip, we stopped and spent the night in Idaho Falls, Idaho. We were there at the end of July. I read in the news, I read a little bit of information about it, and evidently 2 weeks before that, Idaho Falls made the news in a different and interesting way. There was a man in 1997 that was sentenced for a crime. His sentence was life imprisonment plus 15 years. I don't know why, but that was the sentence, all right? Life imprisonment plus 15 years. So in 1997, that's 22 years ago, he was sentenced to prison and has spent the last 22 years in prison. But in July, a couple weeks before we passed through that very same town, he was declared actually innocent. Can you imagine what it would be like for a man to have spent 22 years of his life in prison and then be declared innocent? What would it be like to be on the jury? What would it have been like to be the prosecutor for that case, only to find out that you had declared somebody guilty who really wasn't guilty? And you used up 22 years of their life, forcing them to sit behind bars when they weren't really guilty. It's a serious thing. In 2016, there was a Burleson County District Attorney named Charles Sebasta, if I'm pronouncing it right. He was stripped of his law license based on the findings that he committed horrible misconduct in prosecuting somebody. And as he prosecuted this person, they went on to spend 18 years on the Texas death row for a murder that he did not commit. And once they figured all of this out and put all the pieces together, the lawyer who was the prosecutor for the case, they removed his license to practice law. Because people kind of take it seriously when you call them guilty, and they're not. And Job's friends are calling him guilty, and he's not. And could it be that there are times in my life in which I might call someone guilty, and they're not? Are there times in which I'm so zealous to defend God that I would go to another extreme and cause some problems? Let's just notice some verses toward the middle of the section here. Look at verse number 7, 13:7. Will ye speak wickedly for God? Now, can you even wrap your mind around that question? Who would speak wickedly to try to defend God? That's an oxymoron. They don't even go together. The word wickedness can also include with it some idea of perversity and maybe even deception. And that's what the rest of the verse says. And talk deceitfully for God. Who would ever lie to defend God? Would you do that? Verse number 8 talks about another interesting question. Will you accept his person? Now, accept his person means you're playing favorites with God. All right, so here's this issue, and you're looking at two different sides, and God is on this side. If you had to make a choice, and there was an issue that was coming up, and God was on this side, how many of us would just automatically pick God's side? Well, yeah. I mean, we would kind of think that way, wouldn't we? I mean, how can you not pick God's side? How can God ever be wrong? And in one sense, Job is saying, you guys are just playing favorites with God. You accept his person. That means you're playing favorites with him. You're playing favorites with God here in this matter. And when Job says it that way, it's kind of like, well, that's a little bit weird. That's a little bit interesting. Who would lie for God? Who would play favorites with God? Will ye contend for God? In other words, will you defend God and try to stand up for him and defend God? They had lied for God. They had played favorites with God, and they stood up for God. And for most of those, as we look at them, they're probably not a big deal. We don't think that they're a bad thing. Maybe lying for God, it would be obviously a wrong thing. But playing favorites with God, defending God, We wouldn't typically think of those things as being wrong things, but Job sees it that way. And there's kind of an interesting point that Job is making here. And it's one that, to be honest, it took me a little while to grasp what he was saying here, and I hope that I can boil it down into a simple truth that you can be challenged with and walk away with here tonight. We cannot disregard the truth in any sort of effort to praise God or protect God or defend God. We can't in any way lie or be dishonest in order to make God look good. Now, these guys knew God, and these guys knew about God, and to be honest, for them to defend God this way and say, listen, when you do what's right, blessings always come. And when you do what's wrong, punishment always comes. For them to defend that belief benefited them. Because they always serve God. And if they believe some other teaching, it could mean that bad things could happen in their lives. And that's not really comfortable. We don't really like that idea. So for them to stick with what they're used to and their basic idea that, hey, listen, as long as you do what's right, good things will always happen to you. And when you do wrong, God's always going to punish you right away. That was really convenient for them to stick with the thought process they had, the thought pattern that they had. It made their life easy. And Job kind of is really accusing them of, listen, the reason that you're saying this about God is because it's convenient for your life. And it's kind of the same little statement that Satan said about Job. The only reason you're serving God is for what you get out of it. And it's almost like Job is saying this about the friends. The only reason you're saying this about God is because it benefits your life. And you know what? That's why people follow the prosperity gospel, isn't it? Because, hey, I serve God, I'm going to be healthy and rich. I like this doctrine, they might say. And so here is what Job is, his thinking is going. And you've got to understand in order to appreciate what Job is saying to these guys here, that their belief system was their comfort zone. Their belief system was something that would be helpful to their own life instead of this dangerous idea, but difficult idea that Job could actually have lived right and bad things still happen to him. That wouldn't be any fun to believe that. And so they stick with their comfort zone in defending God. And when they defend God, they're lying. Because what do you know about Job from chapter 1 and 2? Is he guilty or innocent? He's innocent. So every time they say guilty, they really are lying. Just like Job says, you're defending God with wickedness and with lies and perversity here. You're lying in order to try to defend God in this belief and this idea that you have about God. And so I got to thinking about how in the world we or I could possibly behave like these friends. How is it possible that I could lie to defend God? How is it possible that I could play favorites with God? And I want to give you just a couple suggestions. Maybe you can meditate on it this week and see if there's some other areas. Because I think there are situations in which we are like the friends. And we love God. And we care about God. And we care about other people. But God is high and lifted up in our minds and in our thinking. And we might actually do what they do. Let me give you a suggestion here that I was meditating upon. This is an interesting thing for me to say this. What about holding to a standard, not because it is biblical or because it truly communicates who God is, but because it is my comfort zone and what I'm used to? And so therefore, in order to fit my comfort zone, I look for ways that I can make God say or the Bible say what I want it to say to support my position. What if I have this standard? What if I have this standard and the standard is more about my comfort zone than it is about the Bible here? And so I make it say a certain thing. And therefore, if somebody doesn't live up to my standard, guilty, guilty, guilty. When it's my standard, not what the Bible has to say. Look, I don't know. I have a position of leadership here, and I lead in a church and lead in a school here and set standards and do sort of things like that. Maybe that doesn't strike you as hard and as true as it does to me, but that's a pretty serious thing to consider. If I come in and just put it in my comfort zone here. What about Westboro Baptist? That our nation has all of these problems because of the gays and all the other weird positions that Westboro may have. They're coming out and defending their comfortable view of God, and in so doing, they're causing a lot of problems here. Or what about this one? What if I'm so zealous for God that I have higher expectations than what God even has for people? We think, how is that in the world? Is that possible? But what if we're more demanding, more perfectionistic, if you will, than what even God is? Is it really right to say that God is punishing Job when in reality God himself has already stated that Job didn't do anything wrong? No. It isn't right when we do that with modern counselees either. What if somebody's going through something hard in our church? What if they're going through a hard time and we say, well, listen, they must be living in sin. We've just said guilty, guilty, guilty. And we've done the same things that the friends have. I don't always know their hearts. I don't always know their situations here. And I got to be really, really careful lest I slip into the same problems that the friends slipped into here. Are there times in which we should be careful in our defense of God? We thought about it this morning as we studied Job chapter number 12, and we realized that when it all plays out, God is sovereign, and God allowed these things to come into Job's life. And maybe sometimes we lie, sometimes we shade it a little bit and say, well, God would never allow that to happen. Well, the story of Job says differently. God did allow it to happen. God even started it because God had a plan. God was attacking Satan. God was teaching people something about himself. And Job is his creation, so God can use Job's life however he wants to. And if we came in and say, well, that only happened because Satan started it, then we just lied in order to defend God. It's a sobering thing. When we have so many opportunities to get up and to give counsel or to try to explain to people why things are going on, and we have to be really careful what we're saying here. They're very challenging to me. If I stand up and say, God says that everyone must do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, but God hasn't said that, then I'm lying as a pastor. I'm wrong. I'm leading people astray. And I can't do it. You know, there have been different times in my studies just since I've been here as a pastor. There have been a couple times in which I've spent a lot of hours studying for a sermon. And I get to, we'll say Friday night, if you will, just to try to help you understand it. And I get to Friday night when I should be all done and ready to go with that Sunday morning message. And I say, you know what? I don't know this well enough to stand up there and say, thus saith the Lord. And I find something different to speak. Because I don't want to get up there and say, this is what God says we're supposed to do or not supposed to do or something like that on some difficult and challenging issues, and then find out that I got up there and I said guilty, guilty, guilty when God wasn't saying guilty, guilty, guilty. We got to be careful on this matter. And Job's friends weren't careful on it. They knew God. They cared about Job here. They knew a lot here. There was a lot they didn't know. But they came in and they said somebody was guilty, somebody's doing something wrong, when he really hadn't done it. And we've got to be careful about that. So I want to walk through the opening verses of chapter number 13. And I want to show you Job gives six suggestions to prevent us from saying guilty, guilty, guilty to others. And this is basically going to cover the first half of the chapter. I'll probably walk quickly through the second half of the chapter and we'll be done here tonight, all right? So let me give you six suggestions to help us be careful. Number one, learn to speak less. Learn to speak less. Let's catch up on our reading here. Verse 1. Lo, mine eye hath seen all this. Mine ear hath heard and understood it. What ye know, the same do I know also. I am not inferior unto you. That is a review from chapter 12. I know that my life is in God's hands. I know it as well as you do. Okay, look at verse number 3. You got your text open? Verse 3. Surely I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to reason with God. Because what Job is saying is, listen, I've heard you guys all talk once. I've heard Eliphaz, I've heard Bildad, I've heard Zophar. None of you help me. I'm tired of listening to you guys. I want to talk to God. I want to talk to God about this matter here. And notice how he describes him in verse number 4. But ye are forgers of lies, ye are all physicians of no value. You've lied to me about this thing. You've put these lies together, and you're doctors that are worthless. Have you gone to a doctor and felt like it was worthless? Yeah, I have as well. Now, maybe there was a little small amount of help, but you walk out and you've spent all those hours, you've spent all that money, and you've done all of that in seeing the doctor, and they really didn't tell you a whole lot more than you knew when you went in there. And you feel like they were a worthless physician in that regard. And Job says, that's what you guys are. I looked to you for help. It was like going to the doctor. I thought you guys were going to help me, and you didn't help me. Now here's our point, verse 5. Oh, that ye would altogether hold your peace, and it should be your wisdom. He simply says this, be quiet. Speak less. If you want to make sure that you are not declaring people guilty that are really innocent, that you're not lying for God, that you're not saying things that you shouldn't say, then don't talk as much. Speak less. There are some times in which you're going to have to do that here. And I just mentioned a time in which I, as a pastor, have had to do that. When I wasn't ready to stand up on Sunday and preach on that, in spite of the fact that I had studied it and worked on it and tried to understand what the Word of God was saying on a subject there, I wasn't ready. And so I spoke less on it. I didn't speak at all on it. I spoke on something else on Sunday. And maybe if you don't know what the Bible says on that subject, then don't speak on it. If you're not sure what it says on that subject, then don't speak on it. I've made the mistake at other times when I've spoken I didn't know. And later on it comes back and bites me badly. And so Job says, just be quiet here. And I think there's something that we can learn on this. Let us be careful. Speak less if we don't know. Than to make up this cause and to make up this story and find out later that we're wrong. He says, speak less. Verse number 6. Hear now my reasonings and hearken to the pleadings of my lips. The second truth we want to see is listen more. Listen to other people. Sometimes we're so consumed with the fact that my way is right. And my beliefs are right, and my standards are right, and my views are right, that there's no possible way that anybody else can be right. And then for some strange reason, God brings a book across your path. A family member goes through that same situation. You hear a radio episode, and all of a sudden you hear it in a totally different way, and you say, huh, I never thought about that. And what these friends needed to do, they needed to listen to Job's perspective a little bit. They need to listen to what he had to say. And maybe there are some times in which we need to listen. I'm not talking about compromise. I hope you understand all this. But there needs to be some times in which we listened to others. Listen to what they have to say. If you're not going to declare them guilty all the time. I have to work on this as a dad. I fail on this regularly. You know, it's easy to come in quick and pass judgment. And then you find out, oh, you know, I should have listened a little bit more and found out a little bit more of the story in that regard. So number 2, listen more. Then look at verse number 7. We talked about this a little bit, but let me mention it. Will ye speak wickedly for God and talk deceitfully for Him? Will ye accept His person? Will ye contend for God? So number 3, learn to defend rightly. Know what the Bible really does say. These friends really were missing out on a key truth about God. And that's part of the whole point of the story is for Job's friends and even Job himself to come to understand that. Defend it rightly. Verse number 9, is it good that he should search you out? Or as one man mocketh another, do ye so mock him? In other words, do you think that you can just mock God and get by with it? Let me read verse 10 and then I'll comment here, 10 and 11. He will surely reprove you if you do secretly accept persons. Shall not his excellency make you afraid and his dread fall upon you? Number 4, anticipate judgment. Job says to them, hey, verse 9, what's it going to be like when God comes and searches your life out? You think that God is searching my life out and that's why he's bringing judgment. But you're lying about God. What's it going to be like when God starts checking you out? You're mocking God thinking you can get by with it. He's going to reprove you. His excellency, when you stand in the presence of God someday and give account of the fact that you lied about God and you were dishonest with who he was, who he is as God here, don't you think it's going to be a little bit of a terrifying thing to stand before God and give an account of that? And you know, maybe if we're going to be careful on declaring others guilty, 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 we're going to have to realize and stop and think about what is it going to be like when I stand before God and give an account of what I said and how I expected others to follow it and whether or not it was really Bible or I just kind of twisted it around to meet my comfort zone and what I'm like and my traditions and my thoughts and my views here. Stop and think about, I'm going to give an answer to God for that. And that's what he was trying to tell them to do. Anticipate judgment day. Verse number 12 is interesting. Your remembrances are like unto ashes, your bodies to bodies of clay. Now, remembrances probably refers to little proverbs that they would say that would stick with you, like Zophar had. You'll be smart when a dumb donkey gives birth to a kid. That sticks with you. It sticks in your mind. And he says, all your remembrances are like ashes. Many a man is a pyromaniac and they like to burn things. And you burn something and there is sometimes this shell of something in the form of ash. You can just simply blow it and it's gone. You know, he says, your great statements that sound so good and they stick with people and boy, they're so memorable here. He says, they're really like ash. And he says, your bodies to bodies of clay. Now, he's not talking about their physical bodies, but he's probably talking about the bodies in the sense of what they use to defend their arguments. They're the bodies of defense. And he says, they're just like clay. They're like that dirt clod, clay, dries, and then when you hit it, it breaks and shatters. Not much of a defense. This summer we were in Cody, Wyoming for a day and we went, there's a nice big Buffalo Bill Museum there. It's a division of the Smithsonian. It has 5 different buildings that are a part of it there in Cody. It's a pretty neat thing. And so we took our family there and one of the whole buildings there is a firearms museum. And it starts with the beginning of firearms and it traces the history and it has guns of famous people there and talks about manufacturing and all these different things. Well, we came around the corner and there was a TV that was displaying, a monitor that was displaying a show. And on the show were these two guys and they were testing out different shooting scenarios, I guess from movies. You know, here's the bad guy and he's shooting at the good guy and the good guy hides behind this and they're like, yeah, right. Would that really work in real life, you know? And so they would recreate these. And one of them is the classic, you know, the bad guys are shooting at the police. And so the police throw open the door of the cruiser and they jump in behind the cruiser and they're shooting at the bad guys as if the door is going to protect them from the bullet. And so they were going through that scenario and they got a plastic dummy and they put it behind the car door here as if that was the officer and they showed the car door and then they went over there and explained the gun and then they shot at the car door to see what would happen, to see if it would really protect them or not. They talked about little things like is the window up in the car door or is it down because it made a difference. And then another one that they did was they had, I guess, some time where the individual in the movie held this huge big stack of money. And the bad guy shot at this, you know, all these hundreds and hundreds of dollars of bill. And would that stop the bullet and protect him from getting shot there? And so they were examining these sorts of things and they found out that there was a little bit of protection there. Now, Why am I saying that? Verse 12, he says, your bodies to bodies of clay. He says, you guys have got these defenses up and you think they're all going to protect you. But is it really going to be? Or is it just going to be like clay that shatters or ashes that are just whoosh, and gone? And so you need to remember and anticipate not only judgment here, but you need to see your own shortcomings. You may have all these defenses and all these explanations here, and yet everybody else that looks at them and says, that doesn't prove your point. That's ash. That's clay. That doesn't make really your point here. And that's what he's trying to say here. So if you're going to truly protect yourself from calling others guilty, 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 you need to see your own shortcomings. And then lastly, in this first half of the chapter, he says, verse 13, hold your peace, let me alone that I may speak, and let come on me what will. Wherefore do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in mine hand? Job's kind of like, you know, I'm tired of talking to you guys. So just be quiet, and I'm going to talk to God, and whatever happens, happens. I'm taking my own flesh in my teeth. You ever bite your own arm? Rip off a hunk of your own skin? Sounds kind of painful. Job would rather do that than to listen to what these people have to say. And I would suggest to you that the statement of these guys, you're guilty, you're guilty, you're guilty, drives Job to make a decision that maybe ultimately isn't the greatest. I want to apply that. Could it be that there are times in which we are similar to the friends and we make these cases, we make these statements, we lie to defend God, however it is, and as a result, people do something rash. People walk away. People aren't interested in what we have to say because we have wrongly labeled guilty, guilty, guilty. So spare the people. Think of how it could impact other people if we go down this path. I find it interesting that Job would say all of this here. We learn a lot about counseling and interacting with others by looking at this, and Job tells us how we can spare ourselves from going down this incorrect path. Speak less, listen more, defend God rightly, anticipate judgment. I'm going to give an account to God for that. How does that change things? See my shortcomings, the areas where they're really it's just ash and clay that I'm using to defend myself. And spare the people. Don't let me say something that could bring great harm and damage to others. So Job is frustrated at these people. Let me just finish out the chapter by explaining it so you have a little bit of an understanding of the chapter here, and we'll move on. Verse 15, a great and famous verse. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Job's saying, you know what? I'm going to keep my faith and trust in God, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. I'm trusting God. But at the same time, I'm going to stand before God and maintain the fact that I am innocent. That's kind of an interesting place in which to be. I'm trusting God, but I'm innocent. Verse 16, he also shall be my salvation, for a hypocrite shall not come before him. He says, I want to talk to God, and you're going to know that I'm innocent because God's going to let me talk to him. God wouldn't let a hypocrite talk to him. If I was really sinning, if I was really doing what's wrong, God would toast me the moment I walked into his presence. He's not going to do that, and he's going to prove that I'm innocent. Verse 17, hear diligently my speech and my declaration with your ears. He's told them again and again to listen up. Verse 18, behold now, I have ordered my cause. I know that I shall be justified. In other words, I put my court case together. I'm going to stand before God, and I know that God is going to declare me innocent, that I didn't do anything wrong. Verse 19, who is he that will plead with me? For now, if I hold my tongue, I shall give up the ghost. If I don't stand up and defend myself to God, I'm going to die. I've got to speak up. Only do not two things unto me, then will I not hide myself from thee. Now, verse 20 changes. He's now talking to God. This is an advantage that the King James translation has in that it changes to thee. It uses the thees and the thous because the thee is singular. So we know he's not talking to the friends with the idea of you, but now in verse 20 he's talking to God. I want to talk to God. Okay, fine. Have you ever thought about what it'd be like to talk to God? Job says, I have thought about it. God, I need you to do two things so that I can talk to you fairly and smoothly. Verse 21, withdraw thy hand far from me. That's all probably referring to God's hands and all the plagues and all the sickness. God, if I'm going to talk to you, you got to give me enough bodily health to be able to stand up and talk to you. And number two, verse 21, let not thy dread make me afraid. How many people today don't have any problem with thinking they're going to walk into God's presence chewing bubble gum and just give God a high five and sit down on his lap up in heaven and God's a good old boy? They maybe not would say it in exactly those terms, but that's basically how they act. And Job says, if I'm going to go stand before God, I'm going to be so terrified, I'm not even going to be able to speak. So in order to make it fair, God, you got to at least help me not to be afraid of you. And then here's verse 22, then call thou and I will answer, or let me speak and answer thou me. Job says, I don't care who goes first. You want to go first, then I'll reply. You want me to go first, then you can reply. I don't care. Verse 23, how many are mine iniquities and sins? Make me to know my transgression and my sin. God, it feels like you think that I'm guilty. Show me what I did wrong. Verse 24, wherefore hidest thou thy face and holdest me for thine enemy? When we were kids, we had one of the ladies we knew down the road babysat us. My parents both worked. And so several days a week she would babysit us and we made a fort out in the trees. They lived on a gravel road, a rock road. And so cars would come by and we had this fort that was kind of in a clump of trees right near the ditch. And cars would drive by and they didn't realize that they were just going to work or coming home from work or going to the grocery store, but they didn't realize that they were our enemies. And we were hiding and lurking in the bushes. We did not throw rocks. We did not launch projectiles. We just pretended, all right? But they didn't even realize they were our enemies. And Job says, God, you're treating me like you're my enemy, like I've done something to you. And I didn't even realize that I'm your enemy here. Verse 25, wilt thou break a leaf driven to and fro, and wilt thou pursue dry stubble? Used to enjoy this playing outside as well. A tree would fall in the wind, would break this branch off, and it would be laying there. And after a week or two, if it stayed laying there, you could go up there and grab the leaves, and they were dry and brittle, and you could just crunch them, and the whole leaf would just disintegrate in your hand. And Job says, I'm like a leaf driven to and fro. That's not much value there. I'm like dry stubble. That's just like hay. That's just like dead leaves that are out here. God, why do you even care about me? I'm like a dead leaf. For thou, verse 26, writeth bitter things against me and makes me to possess the iniquities of my youth. I feel like you're bringing up sins from a long time ago when I was a boy, when I was a teenager here. You put my feet also in stocks. You know, you've got me shackled down. And you look narrowly unto all my paths. You know, you're really watching all my paths and restraining where I can go. And thou settest a print upon the heels of my feet. God's fingerprinted him or footprinted him. And everywhere Job goes, God's tracking him and watching him like a hawk. Just ready to pounce on him and zap him with his lasers and lightning beams and all that stuff. And he is a rotten thing, consumeth as a garment that is moth-eaten. I'm just being consumed away and dying. He feels like God is saying to him that you're guilty, guilty, guilty. And so Job brings out this expression as he's talking to God and just sharing his heart with God. The truth that I wanted to bring out to you tonight and to myself is just let us be careful in our conversations with others. His friends mean well. His friends know God. His friends love him. But his friends have said some things pretty wrongly to try to defend God. And let us be careful that we don't condemn others unjustly and improperly, but instead speak less, listen more, defend rightly, anticipate judgment, see our own shortcomings when it's really just an argument of ashes and clay, and spare people so that we don't bring harm to their lives. It's an important thing for us. We all have traditions. We all have thoughts and ideas and standards and stuff that we're comfortable with. But let's not just defend them just because it's our comfort zone and what makes our life comfortable, but instead make sure this is really what God is like and what God has said in His Word.
Visit us at 11164 Hanson Boulevard or online at coonrapidsbaptist.org.